Chapter 9. Oh, yes. I always do about half a mile off. Seen anybody about? No, not a soul. Not a shadow. Did you blow your whistle? Blow the whistle? You think I would do such a thing? He rejected the mere possibility of such an unwarrantable intrusion. Wonderfully delicate fellow, Davidson. Well, but how do you know that they are there? He was naturally asked. Hest had entrusted Mrs. Schomburg with a message for Davidson a few lines in pencil on a scrap of crumpled paper. It was to the effect that an unforeseen necessity was driving him away before the appointed time. He begged Davidson's indulgence for the apparent discourtesy. The woman of the house, meaning Mrs. Schomburg, would give him the facts, though unable to explain them, of course. What was there to explain? Wondered Davidson dubiously. He took a fancy to that fiddle-playing girl, and she to him, apparently, I suggested. Wonderfully quick work, reflected Davidson. How do you think will come of it? Repentance, I should say. But how is it that Mrs. Schomburg has been selected for a confidant? For indeed a waxwork figure would have seemed more useful than that woman whom we all were accustomed to see sitting elevated above the two billiard tables without expression, without movement, without voice, without sight. Why, she helped the girl to bolt, said Davidson, turning at me his innocent eyes, rounded by the state of constant amazement in which this affair had left him, like those shocks of terror or sorrow which sometimes leave their victim afflicted by nervous trembling. It looked as though he would never get over it. Mrs. Schomburg jerked Hest's note, twisted like a pipe light, into my lap, while I sat there unsuspecting, Davidson went on. Directly I had recovered my senses, I asked her what on earth he had to do with it that Hest should leave it with her. And then, behaving like a painted image, rather than a live woman, she whispered, just loud enough for me to hear. I helped them. I got her things together, tied them up in my own shawl, and threw them into the compound out of a back window. I did it. That woman, that you would say, hadn't the pluck to lift her little finger, marveled Davidson in his quiet, slightly panting voice. What do you think of that? I thought she must have had some interest of her own to serve. She was too lifeless to be suspected of impulsive compassion. It was impossible to think that Hest had bribed her. Whatever means he had not the means to do that. Or could it be that she was moved by that disinterested passion for delivering a woman to a man which in respectable spheres is called matchmaking? A highly irregular example of it. It must have been a very small bundle, remarked Davidson further. I imagine the girl must have been specially attractive, I said. I don't know. She was miserable. I don't suppose it was more than a little linen, and a couple of those white frocks they wear on the platform. Davidson pursued his own train of thought. He supposed that such a thing had never been heard of in the history of the tropics. For where could you find anyone to steal a girl out of an orchestra? No doubt fellows here and there took a fancy to some pretty one, but it was not for running away with her. Oh dear no! It needed a lunatic like Hest. Only think what it means, wheezed Davidson, imaginative under his invincible placidity. Us only try to think. Brooding alone on Samburin has upset his brain. He never stopped to consider, or he couldn't have done it. No sane man. How is a thing like that to go on? What's he going to do with her in the end? It's madness. You say that he's mad. Schomburg tells us that he must be starving on his island, so he may end yet by eating her, I suggested. Mrs. Schomburg had had no time to enter into details, Davidson told us. Indeed, the wonder was that they had been left alone so long. The drowsy afternoon was slipping by. Footsteps and voices resounded on the veranda, I beg pardon, the piazza, the scraping of chairs, the ping of a smitten bell. Customers were turning up. Mrs. Schomburg was begging Davidson hurriedly, but without looking at him, to say nothing to anyone, when on a half-uttered word her nervous whisper was cut short. through a small inner door, Schomburg came in, his hair brushed, his beard combed neatly, but his eyelids still heavy from his nap. He looked with suspicion at Davidson, and even glanced at his wife. But he was baffled by the natural placidity of the one, and the acquired habit of immobility in the other. "Have you sent out the drinks?" he asked surlily. She did not open her lips, because just then the head boy appeared with a loaded tray, on his way out. Schomburg went to the door, and greeted the customers outside, but did not join them. He remained blocking half the doorway, with his back to the room, and was still there when Davidson, after sitting still for a while, rose to go. At the noise he made, Schomburg turned his head, watched him lift his hat to Mrs. Schomburg, and receive her wooden bow accompanied by a stupid grin, and then looked away. He was loftily dignified. Davidson stopped at the door, deep in his simplicity. "I am sorry you won't tell me anything about my friend's absence," he said. "Why, friend asked, you know. I suppose the only course for me now is to make inquiries down at the port. I shall hear something there, I don't doubt." "Make inquiries of the devil," replied Schomburg in a hoarse mutter. Davidson's purpose in addressing the hotel keeper had been mainly to make Mrs. Schomburg safe from suspicion. But he would fain have heard something more of his exploit from another point of view. It was a shrewd try. It was successful in a rather startling way, because the hotel keeper's point of view was horribly abusive. All of a sudden, in the same hoarse sinister tone, he proceeded to call his many names, of which Eggdog was not the worst, with such vehemence that he actually choked himself. Profiting from the pause, Davidson, whose temperament could withstand worse shocks, remonstrated in an undertone. "It's unreasonable to get so angry as that. Even if he had run off with your cash box," the big hotel keeper bent down and put his infuriated face close to Davidson's. "My cash box? My, look here, Captain Davidson. He ran off with a girl. What do I care for the girl? The girl is nothing to me." He shot out an infamous word which made Davidson start. That's what the girl was, and he reiterated the assertion that she was nothing to him. What he was concerned for was the good name of his house. Wherever he had been established, he had always had hurtist parties staying in his house. One recommended him to the others, but what would happen now, when it got about that leaders ran the risk in his house of losing members of their troop? And just now, when he had spent 734 guilders in building a concert hall in his compound, was that a thing to do in a respectable hotel? The cheek, the indecency, the impudence, the atrocity. Vagabond, imposter, swindler, ruffian, schweinhund. He had seized Davidson by a button of his coat, detaining him in the doorway, and exactly in the line of Mrs. Schomburg's stony gaze. Davidson stole a glance in that direction, and thought of making some sort of reassuring sign to her, but she looked so bereft of senses, and almost of life, perched up there, that it seemed not worthwhile. He disengaged his button with firm placidity. Thereupon, with a last stifled curse, Schomburg vanished somewhere within, to try and compose his spirits in solitude. Davidson stepped out on the veranda. The party of customers there had become aware of the explosive interlude in the doorway. Davidson knew one of these men, and nodded to him in passing, but his acquaintance called out, "Isn't he in a filthy temper? He's been like that ever since." The speaker laughed aloud, while all the others sat smiling. Davidson stopped. "Yes, rather. His feelings were, he told us, those of bewildered resignation. But of course, that was no more visible to the others than the emotions of a turtle when it withdraws into its shell." "It seems unreasonable," he murmured thoughtfully. "Oh, but they had a scrap," the other said. "What do you mean? Was there a fight?" "A fight with Hest?" asked Davidson, much perturbed, if somewhat incredulous. "Hest? No, these two, the bandmaster, the fellow who's taking these women about, and our Schomburg. Signor San Giacomo ran amok in the morning and went for our worthy friend. I tell you, they were rolling on the floor together on this very veranda, after chasing each other all over the house, doors slamming, women screaming, 17 of them, in the dining room, Chinamen up the trees. Hey, John? You climb tree to see the fight, eh? The boy, almond-eyed and impassive, emitted a scornful grunt, finished wiping the table, and withdrew. That's what it was, a real, go as you please scrap. And San Giacomo began it. Oh, here's Schomburg. Say, Schomburg, didn't he fly at you when the girl was missed, because it was you who insisted that the artists should go about the audience during the interval? Schomburg had reappeared in the doorway. He advanced. His bearing was stately, but his nostrils were extraordinarily expanded, and he controlled his voice with apparent effort. Certainly. That was only business. I quoted him special terms and all for your sake, gentlemen. I was thinking of my regular customers. There's nothing to do in the evenings in this town. I think, gentlemen, you were all pleased at the opportunity of hearing a little good music, and where's the harm of offering a grenadine, or what not, to a lady artist? But that fellow, that sweetie got round the girl. He got round all the people out here. I've been watching him for years. You remember how he got round Morrison? He changed front abruptly, as if on parade, and marched off. The customers at the table exchanged glances silently. Davidson's attitude was that of a spectator. Schomburg's moody pacing of the billiard room could be heard on the veranda. And the funniest part is, resumed the man who had been speaking before an English clerk in a Dutch house, the funniest part is that before 9 o'clock that same morning those two were driving together in a gharry down to the port, to look for Hest and the girl. I saw them rushing around making inquiries. I don't know what they would have done to the girl, but they seemed quite ready to fall upon your Hest, Davidson, and kill him on the quay. He had never, he said, seen anything so queer. Those two investigators working feverishly to the same end were glaring at each other with surprising ferocity. In hatred and mistrust they entered a steam launch and went flying from ship to ship all over the harbor, causing no end of sensation. The captains of vessels, coming on shore later in the day, brought tales of a strange invasion, and wanted to know who were the two offensive lunatics in the steam launch, apparently after a man and a girl, and telling a story of which one could make neither head nor tail. Their reception by the roadstead was generally unsympathetic, even to the point of the mate of an American ship bundling them out over the rail with unseemly precipitation. Meantime, Hest and the girl were a good few miles away, having gone in the night on board one of the Tessman schooners bound to the eastward. This was known afterwards from the Javanese boatman whom Hest hired for the purpose at 3 o'clock in the morning. The Tessman schooner had sailed at daylight with the usual land breeze, and was probably still in sight in the offing at the time. However, the two pursuers, after their experience with the American mate, made for the shore. On landing, they had another violent row in the German language. But there was no second fight, and finally, with looks of fierce animosity, they got together into a gharry obviously with the frugal view of sharing expenses and drove away, leaving an astonished little crowd of Europeans and natives on the quay. After hearing this wondrous tale, Davidson went away from the hotel veranda, which was filling with Schomburg's regular customers. Hest's escapade was the general topic of conversation. Never before had that unaccountable individual been the cause of so much gossip, he judged. No. Not even in the beginnings of the Tropical Belt Coal Company, when becoming for a moment a public character, was he the object of a silly criticism and an intelligent envy for every vagabond and adventurer in the islands. Davidson concluded that people liked to discuss that sort of scandal better than any other. I asked him if he believed that this was such a great scandal after all. Heavens, no, said that excellent man who, himself, was incapable of any impropriety of conduct. Other is a day thing I would have done myself. I mean, even if I had not been married. There was no implied condemnation in the statement, rather something like regret. Davidson shared my suspicion that this was in its essence the rescue of a distressed human being. Not that we were two romantics, tinging the world to the hue of our temperament, but that both of us had been acute enough to discover a long time ago that text was. I shouldn't have had the pluck, he continued. See a thing all round, as it were, but text doesn't, or else he would have been scared. You don't take a woman into a desert jungle without being made sorry for it sooner or later, in one way or another, and text being a gentleman only makes it worse. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.